Okay, so this is the last parak in the first section of Sefer Yehoshua. So basically, until this point, we've been discussing over and over again this whole transition going from the era of being in the Midbar to entering into Eretz Yisrael, going from the miraculous existence to the natural existence, going from Moshe to Yehoshua. And Parak Hei is going to conclude this section, and starting next week in Parak Vav, we are going to begin a new section, which is going to be devoted to the actual conquest of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so there's three main topics we're going to be discussing in Parak Hei, and those are Brit Milah, Korban Pesach, and the Malach. Okay, looked at it inside yet. Okay, so I'm going to start with Brit Milah. So Rashi says, not on your source sheet, but Rashi explains that, okay, so first of all, the parak starts out and discusses how all the nations are very scared of Bnei Israel now that they've crossed the Jordan, and they heard about the miracle of the splitting of the sea, and they're all very, very scared. One question about that, and then it jumps right into Brit Milah, and we'll discuss in a few minutes why it starts off with that introduction. And then it says, "Ba'et ahi yamar Hashem l'Yoshua, asei lecha charvot tzurim, yishuv mol et Bnei Israel shinit." Okay, you should prepare a knife of some sort and go back and circumcise all Bnei Israel a second time. Rashi explains on the word shinit, what does it mean a second time? So Rashi says, "Shemalu kfar bilel yitziyah min Mitzrayim, kahal gadol yachad v'zu pam shinit." That on the eve of Yitziyah Mitzrayim, as they're preparing to leave, what are they busy doing? Moshe is giving a Brit Milah to all of Bnei Israel, a mass circumcision. Okay, all the years that they were in Mitzrayim, they were unable to do this mitzvah, and so since they are about to bring the Korban Pesach, and the Korban Pesach, the rule is that you have to, only people who are circumcised can participate in the mitzvah, so therefore they all need to do a bris right then before they do the Korban Pesach, before they leave. So as they entered into the Midbar, basically the entire nation now does have a bris, but as we know, that whole generation dies out in the Midbar, and the new generation that was born in the Midbar did not have a Milah. So there's really this very direct parallel, again, between what happened in Moshe's time and what happened in Yehoshua's time. Before they leave Mitzrayim, Moshe gives this mass circumcision to all people, and now as they enter into Eretz Yisrael, Yehoshua again does this mass circumcision to all of Bnei Israel. Okay, so, no.
Why would that be? Why does it have to be done
Dafka that night when they leave and Dafka when they come in?
Why
was it not done in the Midbar? Good, okay. So hold that question.
Because their attack was dangerous. But they wouldn't have been dangerous as they were leaving.
Was it the same with Moshe when he traveled with the two children to Mitzrayim, and he was also traveling, and then the whole thing. And they were also traveling, and he had to do the brit.
Okay, so we're going to hold that question. It's going to be soon. First, we're just going to talk about the significance of a brit milah to begin with. Like, what is so significant about this mitzvah? So, who was the first person who had this command?
Avram.
Okay, so we see in the first source, when Avram gets this command, it says, "Vayi Avram ben tishim shana v'tisha shanim." Avram was 99 years old. "Vayar Hashem el Avram, vayomer elav ani kel shakai t'telech l'fanai v'yet tamim." It says, "Okay, I am Hashem your God. You should walk before me. You should be tamim. Ve'na briti b'ni v'necha. I'm going to make this brit, I'm going to make some sort of covenant between us, and I will cause you to multiply a lot." Avram goes into this deep sleep, and Hashem says to him, "Ani hine briti itach, vayita la'av among goyim. I am making this brit with you, and you will be the father of many nations. V'leikere od et shumcha Avram, vaya shumcha Avraham, ki av among goyim nisatich. V'vreti otach v'mo'od me'od, I'm going to make you a big nation, and tatich al agoyim, v'mulachim imcha yitzeyu. An entire nation and kings are going to come from you. V'akimoti yabriti b'ini v'necha, v'bein zaracha acharecha, v'zaratam l'brit olam." And again, I'm going to make this brit between all of your future generations that come from you forever. להיות לך לאלוקים ולזרעך אחריך. ונתתי לך לזרעך אחריך את ארץ מגוריך, את כל ארץ כנען לאחוזת עולם. And I'm going to give this, all these future generations that are going to come from you, they're going to receive ארץ כנען. והייתי להם לאלוקים. Okay, ויאמר אלוקים אל אברהם, ואתה את בריתי תשמור, אתה ובזרעך אחריך לדורותם, you must keep my brit. וזאת בריתי אשר תשמור ביני ביניכם ובין זרעך אחריך. And basically, what is going to be the symbol of this brit? Himol lachem kol zachar. Right, you're going to circumcise all males, and you must matzar alotchem, v'yah le'ot brit b'ni b'neichem. So basically, we see from here that the idea of the brit milah is, in essence, sealing. Like there is a brit between Avram and Hashem, between Avram's children and Hashem, and the physical manifestation of this is the brit milah. And we have this very physical mark put onto the bodies in order to show that there was this brit, this covenant, this sort of like this statement that we have this relationship with Hashem. And the Sefer HaChinuch says, "Mishashay mitzvazu the purpose of this mitzvah l'fi sheratza Hashem yitzvarach l'tzvoa ba'am asher higdil liyot nikra l'shmo ot kavua b'gufam." Hashem wanted this nation that He set apart from all other nations to have a set symbol on their bodies, l'havdila mishar amim b'tzirat gufam, that there should be something setting them apart physically from all other nations. And so by undergoing a circumcision, a Jew actively enters into this covenant with Hashem, that he becomes a part of the Jewish people, and the mark kind of identifies him with everybody else. He can't hide from it, right? Everybody can, it's a very obvious sign, if it's seen. He can't forget that he's part of a bigger nation. Right? And it's done specifically in an area that's connected to the reproductive capacity, and that shows it's a very eternal, an eternal sign that goes on forever. So it's really very fitting that these two mass circumcisions are going to take place at moments that define us as a nation. Right? As people are leaving Mitzrayim and they're about to become really a nation for the first time, so they take upon themselves this mitzvah, and as they enter the land 40 years later, and they're about to come into this new stage of nationhood, a nation within their own land, so again, they have to undergo this brit milah. And it's interesting that Hashem specifically in this, when he's talking to Avram and he talks about what the brit is all about, he throws in there, and they're going to get Eretz Canaan, right? This is a very, the fact that they're going to have Eretz Yisrael is really very much connected to the fact that they're going to be Hashem's nation. It's not just Hashem and Bnei Yisrael, but it's also in Eretz Yisrael. That's a very strong link between the brit milah. I mean, the whole idea of Hashem having a special nation is really meant to be ideally in Eretz Yisrael, and it's really all connected together. What did you say? Okay. What did you say? And actually, look, just jump down to source number 8. The Yaakov Shimoni in the Midrash says, "Avirachav Yerichava b'shim Rabbi Abin b'Rabbi Yosi." Davar Amar Lahem Yoshua Umalan. Amar Lahem, Ma Atem Sovrim Shatem Nechasim La'aretz Ha'elim. When Yoshua does, in fact, go to circumcise them in Yoshua, so Yoshua, he says to them, what do you think? You're going to be able to enter into Eretz Yisrael without having bris milah? Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu L'Avram, Natati Lecha L'Zerecha Acharecha, Amanat Ve'atat B'ti Tishmor. When Hashem gave this command to Avram, it was very connected to Eretz Yisrael. Right? In order, Avram is going to receive the land, his children receive the land, Amanat, that they are keeping the brit, and not only keeping the brit in the more global sense, but keeping the brit and actually having the brit milah. Okay. So now we're going to go back to Belinda's question. Okay, so why was it that they were not performing this mitzvah in the desert? Okay, and you gave some possible answers, and which we'll see inside. So Rashi, sorry, it's not in Rashi, but Rashi says, "Veitshekol ha'arba'im shana shayita mibar, lo nashva lahem ruch tziponit, v'lo ya lahem yom noach limo." The whole time that they were in the desert, there was not this northern wind, and therefore there was no good day to have a birth. And then there was some sort of northern wind that's out there that we don't necessarily know about, but the northern wind helps people in the healing process. And under normal circumstances, the northern wind is always there, pretty much on a daily basis. But now, because it was gone for so long, right, they were unable to do it. There was, they couldn't find a good day to do a circumcision because there was never this wind, and how are they going to be healed? Okay, and that was considered to be really an acceptable reason why they shouldn't do a birth. It was dangerous for them. There was no way they can be healed afterwards, and therefore they couldn't do it. Now you want to ask your question to how?
I mean, that was full of me seeing really flaws.
Good.
Like,
right, it seems a little bit lean.
Yeah,
as well. Good. Okay, so yeah, we're going to get to that. But according to the way that Rashi presents it, it seems very acceptable. They couldn't do it. There was a, there was something that was blocking them. It wasn't their fault. There was no northern wind. They couldn't do it. End of story. Doing what we're saying. Okay, the Razak says in source number 3, the Yish Lefarish Gamkin, Ki Lefichach Lo Malu Kol Otan Hashanim, Lefish Ne'emar, Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, Al Pi Hashem Yisau. Velo Ayu Yodim Yom Nisam, Vim Ayu Malim Yudim, Vayu Nusim Yom Hamila, Hayu Anulim Sakanam Nezerach. Okay, so the idea was in the Midbar, because they never knew when they were going to travel, right? Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, Al Pi Hashem Yisau. Whenever the clouds went up, that's when they had to travel. They had no idea what their plans were, and if they would have to travel on the day that a baby was just circumcised, it would be very dangerous for the baby to be traveling. And again, this is really the idea. We talked about the Midbar school, what they were learning the whole time they were in the desert. Right? One of the things that they were trying to learn was this dependence on Hashem, and that really is why it was that way, why they could never know. They didn't know what their travel plans were. Right? It was totally dependent on Hashem. When Hashem told them to go, that's when they would go. But because of that, there was this danger, and therefore, again, the Radak, similar to Rashi, really leaves it as it wasn't their fault, there's something they could do about it, that was the circumstances, and therefore they just couldn't have a birth. Okay. Now the Gemara, if you look in source number 4, gives a little bit more of a story to it. It says, Uba Midbar, my tama lo mahul. In the Midbar, why was it that they weren't circumcised? You could say that it was because they were weak from traveling, which goes very well with the Radak. Right? And if you want, you can say, or like Rashi says, it could be because they didn't have a northern wind. Because we learn in the Braisa that all the 40 years that they were in the desert, there was no northern wind. Now he goes on. My time. What was the reason for this? Why was there no northern wind? Right, as Belinda says, Hashem easily could have made there to be a northern wind. He could do any miracle. So why was it that there was no northern wind? One could say that it was because they were rejected. Or you could say maybe it was because we didn't want the Anane HaKavod to blow away. Okay. So we're going to focus mainly on the first answer, because again, Hashem could have made a miracle that the clouds wouldn't blow away. But if you focus on the first answer, right, maybe it was because they were in this time of tochacha, they were being rejected, they were being rebuked. Okay, it's interesting. Where is this coming from? What are they being rejected from? What's the rebuke of that? What did they do wrong?
It's also interesting that the people who are being rebuked are the ones who actually had the Brit Mila before they went. So, I mean, what did the babies do?
You're saying babies are being punished for, and they actually weren't. Okay, so what is it? What is this period of rebuke? So Rashi actually talks about it somewhere else. If you look in verse 5, so in Devarim is when Moshe is giving his farewell speech, and he says, "Vayamim asher halachnu mikadesh Barnea." Okay, so the days that we walked from Kadesh Barnea, which is when Chet HaMeraglim happened, until we got to Nachal Zered, was 38 years. Ad tom kol ador anshei ha-mechama mikarav ha-machane kasher nishva Hashem lahem, until all that generation died out. Vayi, kasher tamu kol anshei ha-mechama lamut mikarav ha-am, when it was once all that generation died out, vayidaber Hashem elai emor, and then Hashem spoke to me. And Rashi here talks about the word Vayidaber. He says, Aval, Mishloach HaMeraglim Ad Kan Lo Ne'emar B'Parsha Vayidaber, Ela Vayomer. From the time of Chet HaMeraglim until now, whenever Hashem speaks to Moshe, what's the lesson that's used? It says, Vayomer Hashem LaMoshe. It doesn't say, Vayidaber. Lulam Decha, Shekol Lamechet Shana Shayu Yisrael Nizuzim, Lo Yitached Imo HaDibor. During these 38 years that Bnei Yisrael were in Nizubim, Hashem did not speak to Moshe with the Lashon Chiba in a way of affection, panim al panim, face to face, vishavadad, in a like nice, relaxed way. Right, so apparently there was this time period of 38 years where Bnei Yisrael were in, they were nizukim, they were rejected, they were rebuked, they were in this kind of, not I tell you, but they were, what did you say?
Dog box.
Dog box?
No,
they were in the dog box.
Sorry. You never know.
And actually, if you think about it, there's a lot of time that the Torah spends talking about the years in the Midbar, right? Most of the Torah is talking about stories that happened in the Midbar, but from the time they go into the desert in Sefer Shemot until the middle of the Midbar, until after Shlach and even Korach, that all takes place in how much time? A year. 1 year, right? Right, Shlach happened when the Meraglim go in, that was when they were about to go into Eretz Yisrael, and that was a year later. So that's basically 1 year time period. And then we get to Chukat, right after Korach is right after Shlach, and right after Meraglim actually happens, and then Chukat, which is when Miriam dies, that's when it starts out with, is the last year that they're in the Midbar. So basically, the entire middle section, those 38 years, are not mentioned at all in the Torah, which is pretty shocking. Right, and it seems that these 38 years are really... These are the years of nothingness, like they're just
wandering.
Yeah, they're wandering and nothing's happening, it's just they're dying out. 38 years of dying out, basically.
That was the point.
And it seems it's very sad, right? And basically, so these are 38 years where Hashem is not speaking to Moshe, he's speaking to him, but he's speaking to him in a very like brusque kind of way, just tell him what he needs to tell him and that's it. So 38 years when they're not able to do they're not able to have a bris. Right? And if you think about it, so basically, as you said, Hashem could have made it that they could have been a bris, but he didn't, right? He purposely made these circumstances that they were not able to do this mitzvah at that time. He didn't want them to. He didn't outright say, that's it, you're not allowed to have a bris milah, but basically he created the situation such that they are unable to do it. Because if you think about it, right, what happened before these 38 years, the last thing that happens is, people basically rejected their future. They rejected the entire destiny of the Jewish people. They said, that's it, we don't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. And once they rejected it, so then they don't belong to have any bris milah, right? They don't want to be the Jewish people. They don't want to be a Jewish people living out their future in the Jewish homeland. And therefore, it doesn't fit. Right? And so therefore, he orchestrates it such that they can't be part of this bris. So,
it's the wrong generation.
It's the wrong generation being punished. But it's not the children that are being punished. I mean, the children are going to go in and they're going to have a bris, right? But these people are unable to fulfill that mitzvah on their own children. They can't bring their children into Jewish people. I mean, they can't. I don't know if they even get that message. It could be they just, okay, they think there happens to be this in Northern, we can't do it. But that was the point, that they're not going to be part of this break. And then when we get to, when actually they now come and they come into the land and they actually do perform the Brit Milah, so if you just look at the Pesukim, he says, "Zeh davar asher amar Yehoshua, kol ha'am ha'yotzei Mitzrayim, ha'sochareim, kol anshei ha'melachama, meitzu b'midbar, b'derech tzitzeitam Mitzrayim." These are the people that Yehoshua circumcises. All the people that came out of Mitzrayim, they already died. Kimulim ha'yu kol ha'am ha'yotzeim. Those people already had a birth. V'chol ha'am ha'yulodim b'midbar, b'derech tzitzeitam Mitzrayim, lo malu. But all of the children which were born in the Midbar, they did not have the circumcision. Ki arba'im shana ha'chu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar. 40 years they're wandering around. Ad tom kol ha'gvay anshei ha'melachama ha'yotzeim Mitzrayim. And until they eventually die out. Asher lo shamu b'kol Hashem, Asher nishpa Hashem lahem levilti haratam et ha'aretz, Asher nishpa Hashem levotam letit lanu eretz davat chalav advash. Basically, even spells it out, right? The reason why they had to wander around is because they didn't want to go in, right? They said, we don't want this land that was promised to our forefathers, that, you know, eretz davat chalav advash. That b'nehem hikim tachtam, these children who were even hikim tachtam, right, they kind of took their place, right? They come instead of them. Otam mal Yoshua, these people Yoshua gives a circumcision to, ki arilim hayu, ki lo malu otam badara. וַיִּקָּשֵׁר תָּמָה כָּל הַגּוֹיִם בְּהִמּוֹ וַיִּשְׁבוּ תַּחְתָּם מַחֲנֵה עַד חַיּוֹתָם. So they wait there until they're recovered. And then וַיֹּאמֶר הַשֶׁם לְיֹהוּשֵׁעָה. So then Hashem says to Yeshua, "Hayom galuti et charpat Mitzrayim aleichem. Today I removed the shame of Mitzrayim from you." Veikashim ma'akum ahud Gilgal adayim azan. Therefore, it's called Gilgal. Right? Today is the day that I removed the shame of Mitzrayim from you. What is the shame of Mitzrayim?
Lack of birth.
Meaning that they already removed the shame of Mitzrayim. That should have been when they did the circumcision as they left Mitzrayim. That shame was gone. Right? But it says again. It's still removing the charpat of Mitzrayim. And Rav Ariel explains in his book, Oz Vanava, I forgot to put it in the source sheet, but he says, charpat Mitzrayim, he had galutiyut shenisharat tzvuah b'Yisrael. What is charpat Mitzrayim? It's the galutiyut. It's like the, how do you translate that? The gullus mentality, right? That, that's still stuck inside of Yisrael. V'hitgalta shu b'chetam raglim. And it showed itself again in chetam raglim. Shagaram Yisrael Yisrael Erev Midbar, which is what caused the Yisrael to stay in the Midbar. Chayim Meraglim Himshich L'Rachef Mi'Avro Shol Sha'am. The sin of the Meraglim continued to hover over their heads, the heads of the people. V'Yem L'Noat K'nisatam L'Eretz L'Olam, and it threatened to prevent them from entering into Eretz Yisrael forever. Meaning, it was always there. It was always that threat of maybe they're going to do the same thing again, maybe they're going to continue on with the same way of Chayim Meraglim. Chashash Azen Nimog. This worry or the fear was only dissolved. Rak Mishav Me'avar Hayamat Hayardin. Once they crossed the Yardin, V'achit Humar Bebrit Amim Bein Ha'am L'Kono. And the Chit is finally gotten rid of once they enter into this Brit Amim between Bnei Israel and Hashem. Okay, so basically, when Bnei Israel committed Chit HaMeraglim, so in essence, they're continuing on with this notion that Hashem is not in control, right? We discussed this when we talked about the Meraglim in general, right? That they still think everything is dependent on them. When they lived in Mitzrayim, they had this gullus mentality that they felt that everything's on them, right? There's no one else looking after them. They have to take care of themselves. And it continued on when they committed Chayim Meraglim. So again, they had this feeling of, we can't possibly conquer this nation. Look at them, they're giants. We can't do it, it's impossible. And they hadn't gotten rid of that mentality yet. They still were not able to recognize that there is a Hashem out there that they can depend on. And only after they get this notion out of their head, through the whole 38 years or 40 years in the Midbar, through this Midbar school that they go through, only then do they finally remove the Charpat Mitzrayim. They remove the scholastic mentality, and they're ready to enter into Eretz Yisrael with this renewed understanding of Hashem's role in the world. And then they re-enter into this spirit with Hashem, and they recognize the interplay of the relationship of Hashem to the nation. After that, Bismillah. And then we continue on, right? And it says, in Pasuk, Vayachanu b'nei Yisrael b'al-Gilgal, Vayasu et ha-Pesach b'arba atar yom l'chodesh b'erev b'arvot yuricha. The next thing they do is they now bring the Korban Pesach. Okay, now the Korban Pesach is very similar to Brit Milah. Why? Because not only was the mitzvah of the Brit Milah neglected for 38 years, the mitzvah of Korban Pesach was also neglected that entire time. The Torah says in the Midbar, in verse 9, וידבר השם על משה במדבר סיני בשנה שנית וציטה מארץ מצרים בחודש הראשון למור. So Hashem speaks to Moshe, when is it? It's the second, the first month of the second year, meaning it's Nisan of the second year. So they've been in Midbar for 1 year now. Vayisu b'nei Yisrael tzat Pesach b'mo'adon. They do the Korban Pesach then. This is the first year after they leave Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim, they're doing Korban Pesach. Vavar sa yom v'chodesh, azeh b'in arbaim, tasu ato b'mo'adon. They go on and they do the Korban Pesach. The Rashi says over there, בחודש הראשון, פרשה שבראש הספר לא נאמר עד ER. Right? If you look at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, it starts off with the census, and it says over there, when did the census take place? It took place in the second month, in ER of the second year. לומר אותה שאין סדר מוקדם ומאוחר בתורה. So basically, you start out Bamidbar in ER, and then we come to Bahalotcha, and it talks about Nisan. ולמה לא פתח בזו? So why do we not start off the Sefer with Korban Pesach? Because this would look bad for Israel. The entire time they're in the Midbar, they only bring the Korban Pesach once. So if we start the Sefer talking about how they brought the Korban Pesach, then it would also immediately beg the question of, wait, what happened the rest of the years? And then we'd remember, oh, this is the only time they did it. And why do they not bring it? So here, the Mepharshim don't even talk about it. It doesn't seem like there's any northern winds or anything like that. They just, they neglected it. They didn't bring the Korban Pesach.
Because that was, that's why they didn't bring the Korban Pesach.
Right. Interesting. Good. Okay, good. So the reason they didn't bring it, right, yeah. Good. Right, so that actually makes sense in a very technical level, right? They couldn't bring the Korban Pesach.
Why?
Because they didn't have a bring Milah and good, okay. Cut that answer. Maybe they didn't want to feel like that's how the children feel left out. Okay, so first of all, there is a very strong underlying connection between Brit Milah and Korban Pesach. Okay, so first of all, on a very technical level, like we just said before, just look in source 11. Vayomer Shem Moshe. This is talking about in the first Korban Pesach, Moshe Aaron, right? Somebody who does not have a Brit Milah cannot bring the Korban Pesach. So on a very technical level, they're very intrinsically linked because you can't have one without the other. Okay, also, the only two positive mitzvot in the entire Torah that if one doesn't fulfill them, they get the punishment of karet is these two. Okay, which actually, if you think about it, makes a lot of sense. Well, we'll get to why for Korban Pesach in a minute, but at least for Brit Milah, if you think about Brit Milah, so when somebody doesn't fulfill the mitzvah of Brit Milah, I mean, obviously there are circumstances where they can't, but if someone purposely doesn't do it, so what they're basically saying is, I don't want to become part of the Jewish people. And therefore, it's not really a punishment, it's just the natural consequence. So then karet is, you are cut off from the Jewish people.
Is the punishment on the father who doesn't perform the mitzvah, or on the child who doesn't have?
I don't know exactly the technical point, but I would imagine probably starts off on the father and eventually at some point he becomes
chayav.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, also, just like the Brit Milah has this identifying mark that shows that he's part of the Jewish people, so also, and it's done through blood, so also the Korban Pesach, they took the blood and they put it on their doorpost, and that was also an identifying mark to say we are part of the Jewish people at Passover. Now the Midrash creates a very strong connection between the two. The Midrash says in source number 12, Haya Rabbi Matya ben Chayr Shomer, Higia Shvuato Shenishba Kadosh Baruch Hu Avraham Sheigal Panav. It came the time when Hashem remembered his promise and he wants to redeem Avraham's children from Mitzrayim. He wants to take them out. ולא היה בידם מצוות שיתעסקו בהם כדי שיגלו. And he saw that they had no mitzvot, they had no merits. There was no reason that he should take them out, other than the fact that they're descended from Avram. But other than that, they have no merits to fall back on. They have no mitzvot. שנאמר ואת ארום וראיה. Right, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel, which we actually say every year on the Seder, right? That they were naked. Wasn't they were naked? Arum mikol mitzvot. They were naked from mitzvot. They had nothing. Natan lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu shtei mitzvot. So Hashem therefore gave them two mitzvot in order that they should have some kind of merit. Dam Pesach v'dam Milah, Korban Pesach and Bris Milah, sheyitasku bam kidei sheyigalu. So they will do them and then they'll be worthy to be redeemed. Shenemar v'avor alayach v'erech mitvoseset v'damayach. We also say that same time. At the Seder, right, so that Hashem came and he saw that they were rolling in blood, basically, right? They were surrounded by blood. They had the blood of the Korban Pesach, they had the blood of the Milah, and because of those two bloods, those two mitzvot, they were now worthy of being redeemed. And so it seems, these are really the first two commands that they perform as a nation, and in essence, this is what enabled them to be redeemed.
Do none of them, the Farshim, suggest that maybe it doesn't talk about the Korban Pesach every other year, because obviously they just did it? Like, it's not going to say it 40 times.
Okay, so we'll talk about that with future references to Korban Pesach. There is a machlokes whether that happened or not, because there are basically like, I think, five or six times within Tanakh where it mentions when they brought the Korban Pesach. So there's a discussion of what happened in between those times. Here, I don't know. I mean, it seems like a very strong rabbinic tradition that they didn't, but I'm not sure if there's other opinions. Okay, so what is this connection between these two mitzvot? We understand maybe why first Mila, right? Why should that be the first thing that they have to do when they leave Mitzrayim? So we already said before, right? That makes sense because they're now making a statement that we are re-entering into the covenant with Hashem. We are going to become His nation, and we're going to do this birth as a physical sign of it. What about
the same thing? That's when they became a nation. They all left together under Hashem, so to speak. So they had the physical Brit Mila on themselves, and they had also the Korban Pesach to, as a sign of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. I don't know.
Okay, so it seems like Brit Mila is really the sign of the individual, an individual connection to Hashem, and Korban Pesach is really like the national grief. How does a declaration of belonging to the Jewish nation? So we talked about this in a different class, right? The whole idea of the Korban Pesach was that they had to go and they had to take the Egyptian god, whom they themselves worshipped, right? And they had to make a statement. They had to decide, are we going to continue to be in a way that are we going to now decide that we're going to serve Hashem? They had to make the decision. And by deciding to kill the Egyptian god and bring it as a sacrifice to the real god, right? So that was really a very big statement. And not only that, right, it was also said it was dangerous, right, because the Egyptians still believe that it was their god and they're going to get upset about it. So they are declaring not only that they actually believe in Hashem, and they're also declaring their faith in Hashem, that they're going to be okay even if they do this. And so in essence, really, Pesach is this time of almost like a national conversion, where each person has to decide for themselves what do they really believe. And we know that not all of Bnei Israel actually left Mitzrayim. As the Midrash says, one-fifth of Bnei Israel left, the rest of them were killed in Makach Choshech. Right? So the people that chose to become part of Hashem's nation, those are the ones that are redeemed, and the rest of them don't go out. So it's a very big statement. And in fact, the rabbis actually talk about whether they have a discussion. In the end, they decide, no, they don't need to do it, but there's a discussion about whether a convert should have to bring a Korban Pesach as part of this conversion process. I mean, it's such an inherent a declaration of saying, I want to belong to the Jewish people, I want to become part of this communal Brit. So just like they have to do a Brit Milah, it could be maybe they should also have to perform the Korban Pesach as part of their conversion process. And then they don't do it, but the fact that they even discuss it shows that it's really, it's a very significant mitzvah. And even in terms of the halachot of a Korban Pesach, we know the Korban Pesach is really it is a communal event, right? There's an idea that it has to be eaten together as a group. It has to be no other korban to talk about. It can be by yourself. There's no issue. But here, Korban Pesach really has to be eaten together. It's the chavura. There has to be these big groups of people eating together. And the Gemara really goes on to discuss the whole discussion about what was it like during the time of the Yisrael Mikdash when they were bringing Korban Pesach. And it was really this like big scene of Aliyah, the regular people coming together. It's really a very, very national event. So this is really the national breed. And the Korban Pesach is really repeated as a ceremony every single time B'nai Israel is about to start a new beginning. As I said before, there are six different times when it's mentioned in Tanakh. Where we have Pesach Mitzrayim, obviously, is the beginning. Then we have Pesach in the Midbar, after the first year that we just read before. And that's done after the Mishkan was dedicated, and now the people's lives are really centered around Korbanos, around the Mishkan, around Mikdash. So this is a new beginning that's done there. Then we have in Yehoshua, and obviously that's also a new beginning. They have to come into Eretz Yisrael. And then we have, during the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, which is right after the rulership of Ahaz, who was a very big Rasha, right? And he closed up the Samaritan people couldn't go in. So when Chizkiyahu comes afterwards, one of the first things he does is he, again, does this renewal of the Korban Pesach. Yoshiah, who also comes after the very long rulership of Menashe, who was also a very evil king. Maybe one day we'll get up to the lesson and we'll review who those people are. But and again, the first thing he does is he brings back the Korban Pesach. And finally, in Ezra, it talks about as the people are coming, returning to Eretz Yisrael during the second Beis Hamikdash, and Ezra rebuilt it. So again, they are the first thing they do as they come back into Eretz Yisrael, they again bring the Korban Pesach. Okay, so, like Leora said, there's no proof. Just because it's only mentioned six times doesn't mean that they didn't do it in between. However, it is very significant, the fact that the times in between are not really great times, and it's very possible that, that it did come into neglect. And even if it didn't, the fact that, that it's really mentioned and it's brought in as like every time something new happens and we become like again a strong nation, so again we're going to like mention it in the Tanakh and say this is what we did. We're going to make this big ceremony and we're going to declare we are again reestablishing our freedom as a nation and bringing the Korban Pesach. And definitely this is true in our story in Sefer Yoshua. And if you look just in source number 14, so Rav Ariel again in his book Luz Barnabas says, Pesach Yoshua nasa la'achar arba'im shana shayum nu'im milasato b'midbar. So the Korban Pesach in Yoshua's time was done after 40 years, where he actually writes where they were prevented from doing it in Midbar. Hu nasa al-seifa shel ha'aretz. It's done on the brink of the land. Kasher l'rishona yatsa ha'am mitachat chasita ha'gluya shel hashgacha. Right? And this is the first time they're really coming out of the protection of the outright protection of Hashgachat Hashem. Now they're not going to live this miraculous existence anymore. They're going to live a very natural life. You know how kakala, they're going to have to worry about the economy, the amura, mishmar, and b'tachon, worry about security. But their job is to take this very mundane world life and to uplift it, right? To be the mekadesh. Now they're going to have to take their own destiny into their own hands. But the Hashgacha of Hashem doesn't disappear. It continues to lead them even though it's hiding. As they enter into Eretz Yisrael, they are turning into a different type of a nation. They're becoming now they're becoming a kingdom. It's a very different existence. And therefore, they now need to make this renewed brit. And the way that it's enacted is really through the Korban Pesach. Okay, so it's really the combination of these two mitzvot together that shows this commitment to Bnei Yisrael as a whole to Hashem and to his mitzvot. and now as they're coming in, so they're really redeclaring their commitment to Hashem and to his mitzvot. And basically, it's a really direct reversal of what went wrong in the Midbar. Right? And now they're correcting it, and they're coming in, and they're ready to come in. And yes, they fulfilled these mitzvot and Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but it was done then in a very rushed way, in a very forced way. They did it because it's what they had to do. And now they're coming in, and they're going to do it in a way that they're really very willingly accepting Hashem's leadership and accepting their life as a nation of Hashem. And it's interesting, right, that we talked about before how Hashem basically created circumstances where they were unable to do the bris during the Midbar, and here it easily could have been that even as they come in, they're surrounded by enemies. It's not a very safe existence, and it could have been that, no, they also can't do the bris as they enter, right? But what happens? So that's where the first pasuk comes in. The first pasuk talks about all the kings, right? How Hashem had just done the miracle of the splitting of the Yarden, and now all the kings are petrified over them. And the pasuk is almost put there to say, and that's why it was okay for them to do bris. Now Hashem made it such that the circumstances allowed them, even amidst all their enemies, they were able to have the security to know that they could do the bris, and everything's going to be fine. It's not just doing a bris for one baby, right? It's doing a bris for an entire nation of adults, right? This is very similar to actually what happens with Dina, right? So the Shechem, right? That was the whole plot that they did against them, was that they had them all do a bris, and then they were able to conquer them, right? So here, it could have been the same thing, right? But because everyone's scared of them, they don't have to worry. That Hashem created it such that they are able to do, to basically, to make them very vulnerable, and still, and yet, not have to worry about it because everyone's scared from the miracle of the Yarden. Back into the parak. So then, what happens next? In pasuk yalef, yechul meyavur haaretz mimachar tapesach matzot v'kabloi be'etzem hayom hazeh. Okay, from then on, they start to eat from the produce of the land. Vayishbot haman mimachar tapachla meyavur haaretz v'lo haya od v'nei Yisrael man v'yechul mitzvot haaretz kanan b'shana ahi. Okay, the man stops, right? And at this point, now they have to even impose the land. And we discussed this before. We talked about how the Mon stopped during the time after after Moshe's death, but they continued to, they collected all the Mon, and they were able to eat off of that for the next, like, how long did we say it was? 6 weeks? At this point, though, now the Mon has run out, and now they really are becoming a nation of the land, a nation of normal existence, and they begin to eat from the produce of the land. Okay, last episode of the parak, right? And this is a very weird story, right? It says, "Vayi biyot Yoshua biyricha v'isai nav v'yar v'inei ish omid l'negdo v'charvosh tufa biyodo." Yoshua all of a sudden now is standing by Yericho, and he looks at his eyes and he sees this man standing next to him with a sword drawn. "Vayilech Yoshua ela v'yomer lo halayna v'ata im l'sarino." And Yoshua goes over to him and says, "Are you with us or are you against us?" "V'yomer lo," says, "No. Ki ani sar tzva Hashem ata bati. I am the general of Hashem, and now I've come." "V'yipol Yoshua al panav arsa v'yishtachavu." So Yoshua bows, "V'yomer lo, ma adoni mizaber alav do. What do you want to say to your servant?" "V'yomer sar tzva Hashem al Yoshua, shal na'alecha me'al raglecha, ki ha'makom asher ata omir alav kodeshu. Take off your shoes, because this is your standing is kadosh, v'yach Yoshua king." Yoshua does it. That's the end of their conversation. Right, it's a little cryptic. The next pasuk, which is actually in Parak Vav, but it really was originally included, goes on to talk about how Yericho was a very fortified city. And that's basically the end of the story. So, what? Right, what's going on? What's this episode with the Malach? There's a couple of different approaches you want to talk about. So, first of all, according to Radak, look in verse 15. Kivakash Baruch Hu Shalach Malacho LiYoshua Kidei Lechazko LeKavsha. Right? So Hashem sends this Malach to Yeshua now to be mechazek him, to encourage him in his conquering. U'Vasro, and to inform him, V'Nireh Lo Kedmut Ish. He looks like a person, V'Charvosh Klufa B'Yodo, and he has this sword in his hand, Moreh Al Gvura V'Nitzuach. It's showing his strength and his victory. K'moshu Nireh LeYakov Avinu Also, the same thing happens with Yaakov when he wrestles with the angel. It came to strengthen him and to tell him that Hashem is going to be with him. Kemosha amar lo, ki sarita im elokim ve'im anashim v'tuchal. He can be victorious. V'chein ba'al Yoshua zeh ha'malach v'charvo shlupa b'yodo k'dmut gibor menatzeach. He looks like a warrior who is victorious. V'husha amar lo Yoshua re'ei netati b'yatzcha et yiricho v'et malka. Right, so the idea here is basically the malach is coming as this symbol, right? You should know, Yeshua, everything's going to be fine, right? You're going to conquer. And as we said before, really, this episode is really the conclusion for the introduction to Yeshua. And at this moment, they're going to go through all the conquests. So not only is it a message about Yericho, it's really a message about all the future conquests, right? Yeshua, everything's going to be okay. Chazak v'yamach, Hashem is with you. You're going to be victorious. And the expression "Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha," where else we had that? By Moshe. Right? Moshe is at the Sinai. Hashem says, "Take off your shoes. You're standing in a holy place." And there he goes on to give him his whole mission. You're going to go now to Paro. You're going to tell him to let my people go. And he's given his mission. It's the first time he's given a mission. Yoshua, it seems like he sort of already started his mission, right? He already became the leader. However, this is really the beginning of his real mission, right? Because In Bamidbar, when it talks about appointing Yoshua, it says there, "Asher yitzev usneihem v'asher yotzihem v'asher yivim." The role of Yoshua is he's going to be the general of the people. His role is really the conquering of Eretz Yisrael. So now the crux of his leadership is about to begin, and therefore he's given this pep talk again, this message, this malach. I mean, he doesn't say anything, but this, the image of him saying, "I am the Tzar Tzva of Hashem," and he looks victorious, will give Yoshua this feeling of security, of confidence that he's going to be victorious. Okay, so that's first approach. Okay, the Ramban. Okay, the Ramban says, 16. This is in Parshat Mishpatim, right after Matan Torah, and there it says, Hashem says to Moshe, basically over there it says, Hashem tells Moshe, "I'm going to send a malach now to lead the people instead of myself." What happens? Moshe b'kish alav rachamim. Moshe starts crying, basically. He's begging for mercy. V'amar, in panecha hochim, atalim mita. If you're not going to lead us, then don't take me with you. You can't do this to me. What are you talking about? You're not going to come with us. It's the malach. And Hashem feels bad for him. He says, okay. והתשובה לפי הדעת הזאת, כי הגזירה היא לא מתקמה עם משה בימיו. So this gzira didn't take place during Moshe's time. אבל אחר מיתתו של משה, רבינו שלח להם המלאך. But only once Moshe dies, so then the מלאך comes to lead the people. וזה שאמר כתוב, ויהי ביות יהושע ביריחו, וישא עיניו וירא והנה איש עומד לנגדו, וחרוש פלפה בידו. ויאמר לו, הלנו אתה עם עצרנו, ויאמר לו, כי אני שר צבא השם אתה באתי. ושם תראה ששאלו יהושע, מה אדוני מדבר על דו? יהושע asked, what do you want to say to your servant? ולא כתיבה דבר שנגלה אליו בעברו. He doesn't say anything. אלא שאמר לו, שנה עליך מיהו רגלך. ולא ביבר למה בא, he doesn't explain why he came. אבל הייתה אמרה להודיע אותו. The whole point of this vision, of this image of this מלאך, is to tell him, כי מעתה יהיה מלאך שלוח לפניהם. From now on, there's going to be, instead of Hashem leading the people directly, there's going to be a malach that's going to lead them into war. That's why he says, now I came. I was supposed to come during time of Moshe, but it was that was pushed off, and now I'm coming. Pushed me off. He didn't want me to come with him. ומפרש אמרו בשמות רבה לטל שלא ימסרו להם שר קוי ממשה. It didn't happen all the time ממשה, וכיוון שמית משה חזר אותו השר למקומו. So then he came. שכן יהושע ראה אותו. שנאמר, So basically that's the point. The idea is that basically this malach, he didn't even have to say anything. The point was that he appeared there, basically to say, I'm here now. Right? You should know that the Hashkacha of Hashem is now, the direct Hashkacha of Hashem is now leaving, and now it's going to be through me. It's going to be this indirect control. And the Midrash, right, analyzes the difference in the reaction between Moshe and Yehoshua. And the Midrash says, 17, see the difference between the first, meaning Yehoshua, and the second, meaning, the first is Moshe, and the second is Yehoshua. HaKadosh Baruch Hu amar le Moshe, hinei anochi shaleach malach. He says, I'm going to send the malach. Yeshivo eini chafit el lecha. I don't want him, I only want you. And he's upset. Right? He's very upset about this fact. Yehoshua ben Nun ra'at ha-malach v'nafal ha-ponav. Yeshua sees the malach, and when he falls on his face, he bows down. Shenemar v'yipol Yeshua al panav arzav yishtachavu. V'amar l'halanu atayim l'tzarinim. V'amar v'yitzchak ma'as talu ha-malach, kivan sheshama halanu atayim l'tzarinim. Never actually read this part. Hold on. Okay, basically he goes on and says, But Malach, when he heard this, he said, "Hitzchil tzoik mitachat tziporne raglav." Yomer lo ki ani tzar tzva Hashem atabati harei shnei pamim bati l'anhel tzra. Twice I came to lead the people. Ani hu shabati b'mei Moshe ruvcha v'tachalti v'lo rata sheilechimo b'tabati miyav v'pol Yeshua panav arta v'shtachavu. Right. So basically, the idea here is that really during the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, this was considered to be a horrible thing. The fact that a Malach is going to lead the people and not Hashem is devastating. Right, and Rav Ariel again in the sefer says, "Mashen achshav kirida b'inei Moshe hafach l'zchut b'chesed b'inei Yehoshua." What was thought of as this horrible failure, this downfall during the time of Moshe, it now becomes a zchut and a chesed at the time of Yehoshua. And he says, "Behetim l'opi hinagvuto shel dor kovshei ha'aretz." And this is really it's fitting for the way for the generation. Meaning, during the time of Moshe, it was a very sad thing. Right, they were being led in this most direct way possible, Hashem was taking care of their every need. And to say now, I'm not going to do it anymore, now the Malach is going to lead them, was devastating. Right? But during the time of Yehoshua, that's what it is. They come into the natural land and they know, right? He knows this is the existence they're going to be in. And the fact that there's a Malach that's going to be leading them is reassuring to him. Right? The fact that even though Hashem is hiding and his Hashkacha is not felt as strongly, but there's still some measure of a connection that Hashem is actually still watching over them, even if it's indirect and it's through the Malach, is a very good thing for him. And again, here we see very clearly this transition to this new lifestyle. So that's the second approach. Right? And finally, the third approach is from the Gemara at Megillah. talks about the fact that the malach was actually of a punishment. He says, Amarlo, Emesh batatam tamit shabin abayim, v'achshav bitatam tamut hara. The malach talks about, right, yesterday, he's been giving him rebuke. Yesterday you didn't bring the tamit shabin abayim, but today you didn't learn Torah. Amarlo, al iza mehen bata, amarlo atabati. So which one did you come for? And he says, atabati, I came for the one that's now. I came because you didn't have Talmud Torah, right? You didn't learn Torah during this time period. Basically, what happened is that because they were so busy preparing for they're about to go in and fight against Jerusalem, and they're strategizing and figuring out what they're going to do, because they were so busy with that, so they neglected Torah study. And the Malach comes here right now to show him his priorities. And he says, yes, you're about to go into Israel, and yes, it's going to be a physical existence, and you're going to need to really come up with plans. You need to take care of yourself. You need to have military strategy. You need to spend time thinking about how you're going to do it. You need to prepare for it at the same time. Right? You can't neglect your Torah study. and this is really a very important message right now as they're going to Eretz Yisrael to really say to him. You have to remember, you have to have a balance. And we see that really with Yaakov Avinu when he goes to fight against Esav, that he has this three-pronged plan, right? And he has this balance, right? On the one hand, he has a strategy, and he has, okay, if they fight, we're going to have two camps, and we're going to separate, and he makes a whole plan, right? And on the other hand, he doesn't forget. He still is davening, right? He has to keep the combination of the two of them. And Yeshua is giving this reminder at this point. So we see really from these three different approaches that really, no matter which way you look at it, really the Malach, really the last episode that happens before they begin this new conquering section, right? And it really comes as very strong messages to Yoshua, right? On the one hand, we saw that it was the idea of this transition that now Hashem's Hashkacha is not going to be as direct, but there is going to be still that indirect connection. And then we also talked about how it's a pep talk, it's an encouragement for him that they are going to be victorious, but at the same time, it's also a reminder that he has to keep his priorities straight. And that is how we end off this section. And next week, we're going to take to continue on with Parak 12, and we're going to talk about the conquering of Yeriko. All right.